Hi, Megan Cloherty here, host of the original season of WTOP's American Nightmare podcast. I'm working on a brand new podcast now called The DMV Download, and it takes a more in-depth look at the biggest local stories that are happening around the DC region. I hope you'll check it out.
Paul Wagner here with Murder in a Safe Place. Last week, we brought you the first half of a two-hour conversation with Detective Nelson and the three Crandall siblings, in which we covered some lingering questions about the case. In this week's episode, the conversation is just a little bit lighter, with some behind-the-scenes stories of an hour-long interview with Tiffany that had to be scrapped, the challenge of conducting interviews in a park, and how physical descriptions of Bernie and the Crandalls came to be. I needed some help in writing some of those. You don't want to insult anyone. Detective Nelson also takes us a little bit deeper into the world of genealogy and why he's hopeful of finally finding Sherry's killer. What follows is an edited conversation hosted by me and producer Julia Ziegler, who has the first question.
What was that like? So you said you worked with Bodie, but you weren't getting your hopes up. Where were you when you got the call or got the email from them saying, hey, We found a match, or we found a relative? And how did that feel to you? What was going through your head?
You're asking me, correct?
Yeah. When you got the call from Bodie to say, hey, we've got something here. We've got some names.
I was working and I didn't receive a direct phone call from Bodie. Our DNA lab is the liaison or the go-between between Bodie and the investigators. I did receive information through our DNA lab that they had something. As a matter of fact, when I contacted Bodie directly to inquire about it, they told me that they couldn't tell me anything. I would have to go through our DNA lab in order to get that information. But it was exciting because I know that this case has been a thorn in my side as far as closing it and not being able to. I kick myself all the time for not bringing closure to Sherry and to her kids. It was exciting to hear that we finally had something going on again in this case, and something that has been successful in the past with other cases. And I've read about other cases that have been solved through genealogy, but as Darren has said before, you have the legalities that you have to look at, especially in the state of Maryland. In the state of Maryland, the laws protecting the bad elements are more strict than any other state in the United States. And they have very strict genealogy research guidelines. But we've found a loophole where we can actually go through Bodie and upload the profiles into GEDmatch and FamilyTreeDNA.com and get some results through that, even though their pools are very small, extremely small compared to what 23andMe and Ancestry.com has. If we could tap into those, it'll be amazing. But we have to work with what we have, and we have a genealogist who is taking on the challenge. She's very excited about it. This is her baby. She wants to continuously run with it. She's very excited about what's going on, and hopefully it will lead us somewhere.
Bernie, one of the things that I've learned about this is the immense challenge you had at the hospital that night and the days after to try and learn about everybody that was coming and going. And you know, even when I first talked to you in 2003 about this case, and then in 2014, I never had a full understanding of really what you had to go through, what you had to do. And so one of the things about this podcast that I'm proud of being able to explain to people all that you had to do and try and run down people out there. I mean, that it still boggles my mind that you had to do it that way. But one question we did have about that, and I don't think I've ever asked you this, was did the thefts at the hospital end after Sherry's killing?
The thefts at the hospital, I could say they slowed down quite a bit, and that could be because they ramped up security after Sherry's death. which was pretty easy to do because there was probably no security whatsoever beforehand. But security was ramped up. A hospital is a small community in and of itself, so you're going to have thefts. You're going to have other crimes, not murder like we've had in this case, but definitely thefts where people have had stuff stolen from their purses or from their office. So that is still taking place here and there. However, the thefts did slow down quite a bit, and that could be because of the ramped up security.
And I think I addressed this in the podcast, but we did have a question about the man who stole the television as opposed to the man Edna Brown says she saw. Have you come to a conclusion as to whether or not they were the same people or that they were separate individuals?
We have not come to any conclusion yet in aspects to that. As I've always said, anyone within shouting distance of the hospital was considered a suspect, and they still are. It could easily be the person who stole the television, and there's a good chance that it's not. We haven't ruled it out either way. And it could easily be someone who has stolen other items, but set aside the television, but other stuff from inside the hospital.
And along those same lines, you know, we've reported that you got DNA from hundreds of people. Did you also take a look at the security people at the hospital, as well as the cleaning crew that found her?
Yes. We obtained DNA from the male cleaning person who found her, even though we really had no reason to suspect him, but we had to obtain his DNA as well. As far as security goes, they were part of the employees at the hospital, so they were pursued also and obtained DNA from. Just because they're security doesn't mean that they can't commit a crime also. Not saying that they did, but they had to be addressed as well.
And since the podcast has been out and it's gotten a lot of publicity from NBC4, has done a couple stories, I've been interviewed on other podcasts. Of course, WTOP has done a number of stories. We know you've gotten new tips that have come into Crime Solvers, and we know of a tip that came into WTOP. But can you sort of put in perspective where tips have been in this case since the podcast launched?
Without divulging what the tips were about, we have received a few. We actually also received phone calls from other jurisdictions, other police agencies in the area who wanted to pass on people that they've had suspected or arrested for stealing or committing assaults inside other area hospitals within a couple years of Sherry Crandall's death. But the leads that come in through from the public, we have to pursue those. We can't avoid that, and we don't want to avoid that. We have to track down those people, obtain their DNA if they're still alive. And there was one person who is not alive that we have to obtain familial DNA to compare it to the case. And we're in the process of doing that now. Actually, we've already obtained the DNA, which is in the process of having it analyzed. But every lead has to be pursued. And fortunately, we do have DNA to rule someone in as the suspect and also to rule them out.
I did want to ask one follow-up question. I realize that this is not the only case that you have. There's a lot of cases and the, unfortunately, right? And there is resource, you have resources to think about and all of that. I know you have your internal genealogist, but I'm also sure that this isn't the only case that she's probably working on. So I wonder if the department has considered, you know, working with some outside experts too. I know that is also a resource question. We talked to Smugs in the podcast, but wondering if you folks have reached out to Smugs to see if he might be someone that you could pull into it. One of the podcasts that I recently listened to on Paul's recommendation was Bear Brook. And in that podcast, Barbara Ray Ventner, who was the one who helped solve that cold case, and she also helped solve the Golden State Killer case. And I'm just curious if you've reached out or if the department ever uses outside resources as well. And if you think any of those folks, or maybe you've already reached out to some of them.
I'm familiar with Bear Brook and the Golden State Killer in those cases, and the work that their genealogists have done, which was outstanding work. However, we're very confident with our genealogists. We do have a team of genealogists with the FBI who can assist us, who we actually have a grant that we can use to farm, and we are farming out other cases to them to work as well. So we can always turn to them. And it's good to have genealogists within the law enforcement community, because I know a lot of people do it as a hobby as well. But we are very confident with the woman who we have working this case. She's very excited about the progress that she's making. And we're going to stick with her until she tells me she hit a wall and is giving up. But right now, this is her baby. And she has said to me many times that she's put her heart and soul into this case, and she'll continue to do so until she could bring closure. And she actually was hoping to have closure before the end of this podcast, but that was being unrealistic on her part.
And I just want to say, you know, my question was not in any way to disparage her, right, you know, credibility or anything like that. I just know, you know, as we've talked about, you know, these kinds of things could take years. Yeah. Years to track down and pursue. Another question we did get in at WTOP was, you know, as you mentioned there's a ton of citizen genealogists, right? Someone asked this, let me find her name, Ann Coghill. She runs a Facebook group in Virginia about, you know, unsolved cases there. But she was asking if there's any way she could help. And I'm just curious, and I'm sure other people who have listened to this podcast are probably wondering the same thing. Are you accepting that kind of help from you know, just outside citizen sleuths, or is that not something you're, you know, looking for right now?
Well, we appreciate anyone who wants to provide assistance. That's always helpful. However, we're not pursuing it at this time. We don't want to muddle up the investigation by having too many hands in the cookie jar, if you will. But we will always consider that if it comes down to that point. But like I said, we do have a team in the law enforcement community who are very good with the FBI, and our genealogist is outstanding. So if it's going to get done, she's going to be able to do it.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, Bernie, because in episode 6, we talk about the case that she's already solved with genealogy, the Mickens-Murray case from 2017. Do you know how long it took her to track down a name in that case?
I believe it was around 6 to 8 months. I can't be exact on that. She wasn't starting from third cousins on that case.
And do you know which database assisted her?
The same database, GEDmatch and Family Tree, yeah. DNA.
In episode 6, of course, I have an interview with Teresa Vreeland from Bodie Technology Group. And what impressed me was that she said when GEDmatch had to opt everybody out, and if they wanted to opt back in, they could. I think the wording she used was it's an easy toggle was the term she used. And she said that she was very encouraged that many, many people opted right back in because right. they wanted to help law enforcement if they could. But that raises another question. And that is, do you have any idea why those other databases won't allow law enforcement in? Is there a reason for that you're aware of?
Well, you have a lot of privacy laws, so they have to give those options to people when they upload their DNA into these databases. But these companies, 23andMe and Ancestry.com, for example, built those protections into their policies as far as privacy goes for citizens. They want people to be able to use their data banks to develop family trees and track down ancestors without worrying about one of their relatives and ending up being charged with a crime. I don't see any reason why you would want to protect the family member who kills someone or commits a rape or some other sort of violent crime in which they leave their DNA and is apprehended through that. But you have a lot of people, unfortunately, who don't see it that way. And, you know, that leaves our hands tied. I mean, 23andMe has, I believe, 26 million samples in their databank. And Ancestry.com, I believe, around 15 million. We're dealing with 2 million combined with GEDmatch and family tree DNA. So we're well behind. And hopefully we can catch up.
Hi, Megan Cloherty here, host of the original season of WTOP's American Nightmare podcast. I'm working on a brand new podcast now called The DMV Download, and it takes a more in-depth look at the biggest local stories that are happening around the D.C. region. I hope you'll check it out.
I want to take a minute to tell you about an experience a friend of the show had with Madison Reed Hair Color. Kim is 42. She gave it a try, and it went extremely well. She says she was a bit nervous about coloring her own hair, but after consulting with the Madison Reed experts who told her to go with Medina Brown, Kim found it was consistent with her natural color and even brought out the natural red highlights in her hair as well. Kim has what she describes as stubborn grays, which need coloring at least every few months, if not sooner. The fact that Madison Reed is made with ingredients like ginseng and keratin and had no smell, well, for Kim, it was a huge plus. With Madison Reed, you always get salon-quality results you can easily do yourself at home. And with the help of a friend, Kim told us it was super easy to apply, and they had a ton of fun doing it together. You can call or chat with a colorist online or take an online color quiz. Answer a few questions, and the Madison Reed colorist will recommend the best shades for you. At Madison Reed Hair Color Bars, the colorists are there to help, even if all you want to do is get set up to color at home. They will color match you with your perfect shade and give you application tips. Kim says the kit is very thorough. They thought of everything. Get Madison Reed Hair Color delivered to your door, starting at only $22. Use my promo code NIGHTMARE, and you'll get 10% off your first product purchase or service, plus free shipping when you use promo code NIGHTMARE. Again, visit madison-reed.com. That's madison-reed.com. Picking up the conversation again with Detective Nelson, I ask him more about the legalities of using genealogy to solve cold cases in the state of Maryland. You also told me that there's a lobbyist in Annapolis that's trying to change Maryland's law. Anything you can say about that?
Yes, it's Senate Bill 187, which I believe goes into effect in October of this year. I don't think they're trying to prevent us from using genealogy in the future. However, they're putting in place guidelines that we have to go through, where we have to obtain court orders from judges, and there have to be a lot of T's crossed and I's dotted in order to pursue genealogy in the future. One complaint we have is that a lot of these legislators are defense attorneys, so the last thing they want to do is help us nail their clients. So I think this may be one of those ways of doing that.
Another piece of information that Teresa Vreeland gave me was that DNA from other states, she's allowed to keep the suspect's DNA in the database, whereas according to Maryland law, in your case, it has to be inserted, checked, and then removed. And then if you wanted to insert it again, you'd have to do it down the road. Is that my understanding of the law?
Yes, there is an annotated code in which, in Maryland, you can only upload and keep DNA profiles in CODIS, in a statewide databank. But that's as far as they went. So that was one of the loopholes that they're trying to shut down now with this new Senate bill. That's one of the loopholes we use, is they didn't say we can't upload it into other databanks and take it right out. We just can't leave it in those data banks. So that's what we are doing with, that's what we did with GEDmatch and Family Tree DNA. And we'll keep doing that periodically to see if we can get better results than what we have now. No, once it was taken out of CODIS, we don't have another data bank that we can leave it in at this time.
Yeah.
Bernie, I have a quick question for you too. Mm-hmm. This is just something I was thinking about as you were talking there, but you've been doing this a long time. What does your decades of experience tell you about who the killer is? Is it most likely someone who had a connection to the hospital versus someone who was completely random, happened to be there, you know, that kind of thing? What does your years of being able to profile, you know, tell you?
We haven't ruled out anything at all as far as who a possible suspect is. I do find it's most likely not an employee, but I can't rule that out as well, because that person is taking a lot of risk to be among people who may know him, may recognize him while he's committing this crime. And this person spent some time with Sherry. It wasn't that he just went in to steal something and fled and left. He spent some time where Edna could observe what took place and where anyone could have observed what took place, or even observe him leaving or going to the scene. I find it hard to believe that someone who worked there would have that courage to take those risks. But, you know, through my years of experience, and I'm sure that Darren has seen it in his line of work, that nothing surprises us anymore. So we haven't ruled that out as far as it being an employee or someone from outside, but I'm leaning more towards it being someone from outside the hospital.
For the three siblings there, you guys have said that, or at least Tiffany has told me that you guys became very, very close after your mom's murder. And you can tell from the way you guys joke with each other that you're still very tight. Has this podcast brought you guys even closer together? Tiffany, you can start.
I think that because of what we've been through, that every experience, it really is just the three of us. I mean, we have our, you know, families now. For a long time, we really were orphaned. So, you know, the three of us at that age, you know, we went through, we did together. And we definitely had periods where there was so much emotion that, you know, we had to take a break, and the emotion had to heal, and then we had to come back. I think the podcast is just another example of something else we've been through together. I think, you know, there was hesitations, there was conversations, there was lots of discussion. And then even throughout the year that it's been in development and as it's been airing, I think every step of the journey brings us closer together. But I wouldn't necessarily say we were, you know, not as close and then closer, because we did have that super strong bond before. But we've definitely, I mean, we're on a text thread, the three of us, and we've, you know, we definitely maybe have talked more here and there because of, you know, having to discuss something, trying to see the, you can't even use the word humor, but just the ridiculousness that is our life. Sometimes you have to laugh or you'll cry. And so I think the three of us bring that to each other when we need it most. But it's just been another experience that we've now done together.
Either Darren or Luke?
We actually discussed this question, and we kind of all agreed that we didn't feel like that when this happened, it actually pushed us, you know, initially apart from each other. We had a lot of problems as brothers and sisters trying to manage a lot of different things that you wouldn't ordinarily have to manage at that age. All of us had our individual issues going on. We were transitioning, you know, from college to college and from high school, and now we have all this going on. And a lot of times it drove a wedge between us, but I think that hardship brought us, you know, closer together in the end. And it also changed, like Timmy said earlier in the podcast, it changed how we interact with each other. You know, there's very little that we don't bring out immediately with each other. If we have a disagreement or an argument, like, it's all out there. There's nothing that's held back. And I think that's because we realized, you know, you don't have always the time to let things fester over months or years. You don't, you know, you hear about siblings that don't talk to each other and things like that. And we haven't allowed that to occur. We've confronted issues head on. And there are times that we do need to take a break from each other, like any other sibling for sure. But, you know, it's brought us, you know, to understand that, you know, you don't know if you have tomorrow and you don't want to regret having an unresolved issue with each other. So in that respect, I think it's brought us closer and have a respect for each other where, you know, we might say some things that are hurtful, but in the end, it brings things to closure if we're able to move on. And it's because we care and love each other, you know, so much. So I think that's changed how we are, and that's moved us closer in a positive way. And this certainly, this podcast has brought us closer together, if not, you know, just from visiting with each other and seeing each other, and Tiffany coming into town recently, you know, it's given us other opportunities to spend time with each other outside of our normal routine. So I certainly appreciate all that stuff.
Yeah. I was able to see you guys, the three of you, a couple of weeks ago, and saw the way you interacted. And, you know, I have six siblings of my own, and you always like to, you know, knock them around a little bit and joke with them. And I could see that with you guys. And clearly the three of you, I saw a deep love between all of you. And Luke, what's your reaction to that?
Mirroring what Darren and Tiffany both said, you know, I was a bit worried about our children hearing about it from somewhere else that we are not at the time ready to discuss that with them. That was a major concern, especially because our kids are different ages. You don't, you know, social media now, they might hear things. So obviously any kind of something like that that you would hear, you would want your kids to hear something from you first, not someone else. So, and as like Tiffany said, I agree with that. You know, we've had ups and downs with discussing the podcast before it started. We knew it would be difficult. You know, we as a group, at least me personally, I felt, not to say that I haven't done much for the case. I mean, I'm not an investigator. I'm not a police officer. I'm not, you know, I'm just a guy. So I felt like it was the least that we could do. You know, it's kind of like when you're a little kid and you, you know, you're on a playground or something, you get kicked down, you know, you're kind of embarrassed. You don't want to reach out and have somebody pick you up, you know? So we, I think for me, it was kind of like reaching my hand up for the first time, kind of being like, okay, I'm strong enough, I think, now to be able to ask for that help. I think that's how I perceived it.
Now that we've marked a year of the new normal, it sometimes feels like we'll never get our old lives back. The uncertainty of not knowing when this will all end is frustrating and a little scary. I miss my old routines, and I really miss being able to see my friends and family whenever I want. Now, more than ever, therapy is a way to find our way out when things feel especially dark. Talkspace lets you send and receive unlimited messages with your dedicated therapist in the Talkspace platform 24/7. With Talkspace, you set goals with your therapist, and they hold you accountable and make sure you're really progressing. Therapy can really help you shift your perspective, find tools to cope in difficult times, and really be a guiding light. And it's affordable. Talkspace is a fraction of the cost of in-person therapy. Instead of waiting for an appointment, you can send unlimited messages to your therapist 24/7, and they'll engage you daily, 5 days a week. As a listener of this podcast, you'll get $100 off of your first month with Talkspace. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com or download the app. Make sure to use the code NIGHTMARE to get $100 off of your first month and show your support for the show. That's NIGHTMARE and Talkspace.com.
So
So to add just a little bit of levity to all of this, you know, in doing the podcast, I was encouraged to describe all of you. And Bernie in particular, I enjoyed the way I described him. But it was a little, Julia helped me with that.
I made Paul do it. I said, what do these people look like? You have to explain for that. Cause I didn't know any of you at that time, you know? And so I told Paul, I said, you have to explain what these people look like, what's their personality. And so I made him do it.
and Tiffany, just to fill you guys in, Tiffany helped me with the descriptions of her two brothers. So calling Luke a blue collar guy, I got a little pushback from my wife when she heard that. She goes, you know, you don't call people like that.
We're all happy to hear when Tiffany said that I was the better looking of the two.
I had to take great care in doing that. But Bernie in particular commented to me that he liked the way I described him. So
you didn't put in overweight.
It's one of the biggest questions we get. I'll tell you in radio, you know, it's the, when someone finds out what a reporter or an anchor looks like, they go, I didn't think they looked like that. You know what I mean? So now you guys are experiencing a little bit of that. Oh, when you put a face to a voice in this case, you know.
Surprised Tiffany didn't bust out another letter and read that again. Try to get the tears going for everybody again.
I'll just say I was very happy with the way I described myself. Thank you.
Yeah. I let him describe whatever emotions he felt when he saw me. I let him type. Set it up, and that was it.
One of the other things that came out in the podcast that I mentioned to the three siblings when I met up with them a couple of weeks ago was that I didn't realize how loud the background noises were with a couple of the interviews. You know, with Darren, there were birds above our heads, and you can hear those. And with Luke, the challenge with us was that there was a little kid playing nearby, and we had to stop talking a couple of times, but this was all because of the COVID and having the challenge of doing these interviews outside. And fortunately with Tiffany, I was able to talk to her before everything crashed down, but it was pretty, we made that by the skin of our teeth, didn't we, Tiffany?
Oh yeah, I know. And the day after Darren episode aired with him doing a lot of the talking, I was like, well, the birds were the star of last night's episode. They were just so loud. Nice to do ours in the studio.
I said to Paul, I go, I was like, we got to explain to people where the birds are coming from. Yeah. Just kind of set it up. You were in a park because of COVID.
Another.
Well, Tiffany, you read that letter. I was like, I didn't know we were bringing props. I could have brought a whole bunch of stuff with me. I could have read some letters and had pulled some pictures up, and you know, but I didn't know we were bringing props. So she kind of played me on that.
Well, and I have all the sympathy cards from, you know, all of the different services, and I've shared with you, Paul. There's like over 500 cards that I have, and you know, Darren was asking me if they were going to be on the wall behind me with like a collage, and you know, just because I, you know, brought out the letter, it's like, but no, I mean, you have to, we all have our own little stashes of things that we kept over the years, but I mean, the letter pretty much says I was the favorite, so.
Well,
I didn't even know you had the letter until you read it.
Well, I'll tell you, the letter, when you read it, Tiffany, I was moved. I was very moved by it, and I know that a lot of other people were. And I'm grateful that you did it too. Something, you know, again, part of, you know, I think people like to see the behind the scenes things. And I'll say one of our other advisors who worked on the podcast, Craig Schwab here at WTOP, when he read the script, he had said to Paul, he said, you know, do you think we could ask Tiffany if she might want to read the letter? And I was like, wow. That would be great. I said, but I don't know if she will want to, you know, and Paul said, well, I will ask and I'll see what she says. So thank you from us for doing it. I think it, I do think it was a very nice thing for you to do. And I, you know, I realize that again, these kinds of things can be traumatic. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I think it was a chance to show that side of her that, you know, every victim talks about that, oh, my mom was the greatest, but you know, that letter really does speak volumes. And I busted it out and read it in one take, and I was surprised myself. I was able to get through it, and I'm glad I did. So thanks for asking.
Mm-hmm. And
I just have this letter. Sorry. It's a letter that she wrote me that she says in here, I wrote a letter to Tiffany, and I don't want that to be miscommunicated as her being the favorite, but if it is taken that way, please don't disclose this until at least 22 years after my death, and then you're allowed to read this letter and explain that you are actually my favorite. And please let Tiffany know that I'm sorry for misrepresenting her as the favorite, if that's the way it was perceived. Signed here, obviously, with her signature. And there's actually also a stamp here from a local notary as well. So I think this is probably.
Are you done?
Hey,
we're all
I'm done with that.
Julia, so I wanted, before I forgot, I wanted to, when Bernie was talking about Edna, you know, our mother was very religious, and she used to, when there was issues, she used to say, you know, give it to God a lot. And so even though Edna might have saw what she saw and was there and had stated, you know, she didn't know she was being helped or hurt, it's a possibility that had she intervened, she might have became a victim herself. So I think God was there, at least in a way, to, I don't know, maybe protect her. I mean, you know, anything can happen, but, you know, she was at least able to give a description, if that's the case. And so that was just my take on, after I heard, or got the email and all that and saw the interview, I kind of looked at it as another side of how to look at that.
Yeah, that's
a very good point.
Interesting take on that, Luke. Very interesting. Bernie, I mean, since we're talking about Edna again for a second, was there a conscious decision not to tell the public about Edna? Was that a decision made by a supervisor, or you decided not to do it, or any insight you can give us on that?
It was a group discussion with my sergeant and some of the other commanders who were there in the war room that we had set up for the case. It was a conscious decision to make not to divulge her description of the suspect. Well, one of the reasons was because we had to verify what she was saying, because we were dealing with someone who had mental challenges. However, if we put out, through our experience, if we put out that description and someone else had information on who they thought was involved in the murder and knew that that person didn't have a lab coat, didn't work in the hospital, then they would hold on to that information and not share it. We didn't want to discourage anyone from coming forward with any information that they had about anyone who could have possibly committed this crime. We decided not to put that out because we thought that that would stop people from calling us with any hunches that they may have had if that person did not wear a lab coat, did not work in the hospital. The thing is, if someone gained access to these offices like this suspect did, unfortunately, there were lab coats hanging on coat racks behind doors, over chairs. They could have easily put one on just to fit in and not stick out like a sore thumb. So we wanted to get phone calls from anyone who thought that they had a hunch of who was responsible, and we didn't want to discourage that.
You know, I kept the three of you guys up to date, you know, constantly on where I was with this, and I was constantly keeping you informed on where I was and where I was going. And then when WTOP decided to jump into this, I just wanted to throw it open to you three. I mean, do you have any questions now that all the episodes are out? Anything that you comes to mind that you wanted to ask either Bernie or myself or Julia about the whole process or anything like that?
Not so much a question, but you know, one
one thought I had after listening was how amazed I was at the amount of detail that so many people could recall so many years later. You know, when you heard Shirley tell her story, Detective, you know, McQuillan, just, of course, Bernie knows it like the back of his hand, but the people who weren't as intimately involved as the three of us, but everyone else who spoke, I just was shocked at how much they could still remember, you know, so many years later. You know, Shirley talking about my mom coming down and eating lunch with them, and, you know, watching her walk back from the, you know, cafeteria that night. And it was just really, like I said, I was just shocked to see that. That's one comment I wanted to share.
Well, that the whole thing times out over 3 hours. So it's, I like to call it a 3 hour ear documentary, basically. Luke or Darren, did you have anything?
At least for Bernie, I mean, I've had some questions that through the podcast, I think that he's answered them, you know, as far as, you know, what's been done with the case and who's looking at it, you know, and stuff like that. And like I've stated before, you know, I wasn't really involved in the case. I mean, as I've taken it, it's been more of a very difficult thing to do, you know, the podcast, and to get involved in it just seemed like something I was never going to be able to do. I appreciate to a degree, you can't really describe that, after hearing the amount of work that Bernie and his team have put in, not speaking to him personally. I mean, I feel somewhat disrespectful, but being hurt to the point that I think we've been hurt, almost like just wanted it to just go away and just, it's not true, it never happened, but, you know, the murder. But I appreciate all his work and his discussing of the podcast, and it's really answered a lot of questions that I've had personally. And so I'd like to thank him for that, and for TOP and Paul staying in touch with Tiffany like you have. I was very reluctant to get involved. I didn't know you at all. And Tiffany, you know, as close as we are, she vouched for you, and, you know, take her word for anything. And so I'm glad we've done this, and appreciate your help. And Bernie, I appreciate you coming in on a weekend. Everybody doing this on a weekend means a lot, means everything. So
I had a couple comments. I guess the question is here with the case. So we're moving down the genealogy direction, and maybe Bernie, if you could, for the podcast, you know, sake of the podcast, can you maybe speak to the public with something with how important it is for people that have any information to still contact, even if it's information they think is not important. If maybe if you could speak to that for the purpose of the podcast, so that people understand, like, this is a viable lead, but it may not bear fruit. It may not get us where we need to be. So, you know, it's still very much an investigation that needs the public's help. It needs people to come forward with any information that they have for us to look at, because it's not like we have the name and we're trying to find the person. We're not there yet. You know, we're moving towards the goal line. You know, we just crossed the 20-yard line, and we're moving into the red zone for the touchdown, but we haven't gotten there yet. A lot can happen between now and then. So would you mind speaking to that and just kind of lend some comments about that, or your thoughts on that, if you don't mind?
Yes. First of all, Luke, it's finally nice to meet you. I'm sorry it has to be under these circumstances, and it's good to see Tiffany and Darren. I've seen him a lot. So he knows, and you all should know how to get in touch with me if you have any questions in the future. In reference to people calling to have information, we naturally encourage that, and we need that. Anyone with any information, no matter how small you think it is, or if you don't think it's going to lead anywhere, let us figure that out. It could be the piece of the puzzle that's missing, because this genealogy search may end up hitting a brick wall again, as other leads have done in the past. But we're still optimistic that it's going to lead us somewhere. However, any information will help, even if we make a identification through genealogy. Any other information will help as far as the prosecution goes, if it gets to that point. So we encourage anyone to call us, and they can remain anonymous. We have Crime Solvers number that they can call. They don't have to provide their identity. However, there is a $26,000 reward that's still there if that encourages someone to call us. But we want people to just do the right thing and share what they have with us. But another message I have for the general public is, if you have your DNA and GetMatch or Family Tree DNA opt-in, allow us to use that as far as law enforcement tapping in to do our investigations. And we just hope that if the other Ancestry and 23andMe databanks allow you to do that as well, to allow the law enforcement access to your profile, do that as well. You know, it doesn't make sense to allow predators to roam among us. So, you know, do what you can to assist in cleaning up this world. And you know, one step is to bring Sherry Crandall's killer to justice. And that's something that I'm striving for and pray for.
If you're a business owner who's hiring, you probably face a lot of challenges when it comes to finding the right person for your role. Too many resumes to sort through, yet you need to hire ASAP. That's why hiring can feel like trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/nightmare. When you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 top job sites with one click. Then, ZipRecruiter's matching technology finds people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. In fact, ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. It's no wonder over 2.3 million businesses have come to ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. So while other companies overwhelm you with way too many options, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for, the needle in the haystack. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this web address, ZipRecruiter.com/nightmare. Once again, remember to go to this unique place, ZipRecruiter.com/nightmare. NIGHTMARE. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Bernie, just real quick, can you remind people what the number for Crime Solvers is?
It's 1-866-411-TIPS, T-I-P-S. And they can call that and provide whatever information that they have. And they don't have to give their name.
Paul, I was thinking, since we're coming up on our time here, it might be nice to just give everybody an opportunity to say a final word, whatever it might be. And I'd like to include you and myself in that too.
Well, I wanted to tell two quick stories because I think, you know, people hear these podcasts and they're all, you know, polished up and released and they sound great. But a little inside baseball. When Tiffany and I got together in March of last year, she came into the studio for the interview and we sat down and we talked for an hour, more than an hour. And I said, okay, Tiffany, let me go check my desk and listen to how it sounds. And I was devastated. It had some buzz on it and it was absolutely unusable. And I had to go tell Tiffany, hey, we got to do it again. Oh no. She took it very well, though. She did. I was impressed with that, Tiffany, and I just have to tell you that. So,
it was for the best because I was a sobbing mess and was not totally thrilled with how it came out. So then to retell it, and when I listen to it now, I have to remind myself that was the second time I might have told that story. But maybe everything does happen for a reason, which I don't ever say. But it worked out.
Yeah. Oh, I felt terrible having to tell you that because We do have times where things malfunction in this business, but that was a deep embarrassment. But you took it very well. The other story I wanted to tell you quickly is when Bernie and I met up outside the hospital in the memory garden. Of course, we're dealing with COVID. It was freezing cold. It was in December. Both of us are wearing masks. And I had to interview him with a microphone at the end of a long pole. And so we're standing there in your mom's memory garden with, I'm asking Bernie questions in this long pole. I'm wearing headphones. I've, you know, got the recorder around my neck. And the whole time I'm thinking, geez, nobody's challenging us. And, you know, nobody came up and said anything. But it was until we finished and suddenly a security guard came down and asked what we were doing. And this was the best part of it, because when you're interviewing a cop, you always know the cop's going to stand up for you. Bernie immediately badges him and says, we're doing a story about an unsolved homicide. The guy says, okay. And then backed off. So Bernie was my helper that day, because if he didn't badge him, you know, I could have been in a little bit of trouble there. So, but it's always nice to have a cop with you who can straighten things out. But you know, my thoughts on this, just deep, deep gratitude on the part of everybody that took part. You guys, Tiffany, Darren, and Luke, I can't thank you enough for sitting down and telling your stories. They were incredibly compelling, highly emotional. Bernie never ducked a question, was always there every time I called, text messages, emails, phone calls. Just, I wanted to make sure the story was told right and was accurate. And it was. And thanks to Bernie, for that. I'm very pleased with how it turned out. I'm very pleased that it's gotten the attention that it's gotten, that it's going to continue to get. There are tips that have come in, new tips. There's new attention being paid to the case. And the last thing I'll say is, you know, I latched on to your mother's case back in 2003 when I first met Tiffany and Bernie, and the case has just never left me. You know, it's just one of those cases that sticks with you. And so I can't thank you enough for letting me tell the story. And obviously the entire reason was to see if we could get some kind of help and closure. And so as painful as it may have been to have to relive some of this stuff, and I know that it was painful for you. I just want to thank you for being willing to tell your stories, and Bernie, for your incredible good work over the years. You're an amazing detective.
Thank you.
Now I'll just add to what Paul said. You know, something that struck me from the beginning, and I think I've said this to some of the Crandall kids, but when Paul set out to do this podcast and approached Tiffany about it, he had no idea that at virtually the same time, Detective Nelson was going down this genealogy path with the case. And that's always just something that has been kind of, you know, when worlds collide at the right time. And Tiffany, I think you said it in episode 6, but like, maybe everything happens for a reason, you know? And my hope, as Paul said, is that something good comes out of doing this story in this way that leads to justice, you know, for your mom and a resolution in her case. And thank you guys, as Paul said, for trusting us to tell your story. And I still can't believe that this is the first time that you guys have all kind of been face to face in this way at the, you know, with Bernie, all the kids and Bernie. And I think, and so thank you for trusting us with this as well. And I'll say with, you know, in addition to being a, you know, producer of podcasts, I'm also I listen to a ton of podcasts and true crime podcasts. And one of the things that is always, I think, very important in true crime podcasts is to honor the victim. And I hope we did that for your mom. We tried to do our best to explain who she was and what she was like. And I think I think Luke, I may have said this to you, or maybe Tiffany, it was you. I think one of my favorite moments when we were describing your mom was her laugh when Paul asked Shirley Montague, I hear Sherry had a big laugh. And then Shirley laughed really loud and she's, ah, yeah, yes, oh my gosh, you could hear it all the way down the hall. And for me, between that and the letter that she wrote to you, Tiffany, those were the two moments that really kind of stuck out to me of like who your mom was, who this, you know, who Sherry Crandall was. And like I said, I hope we've done a good job of honoring her through this process.
Yeah, you guys definitely have. I mean, I think a big reason why we wanted to, other than of course to bring light and to get eyes and ears on the case, was we touched on it a little, but we were so young. And I think there is probably an unspoken guilt that the three of us have for not doing more. And what could we have done at 16 and 20? And but that's gonna live with us. And so I know for me that, you know, it was like, can we do something now? Yes, then we'll do it. You know, there was a lot of anxiousness and nervousness in the year since, you know, I met with Paul. Like, what will he say? We've had these conversations, how will it sound? And just, you know, in listening to it and after the first episode, there was just such a relief. And you guys did a beautiful job of painting a great picture of her, who she was, what happened, being respectful about it. And, you know, that, you know, means the world. I think we've mentioned that the three of us have not shared this with our children. And I think in some ways, you know, now we have this record. There is a story to tell that they probably will one day listen to. And it's not something that we would be embarrassed or ashamed or not want them to one day when they're much, much older. But, and I want to echo too, just, you know, a lot of it hinged on Detective Nelson and him being able to do this as well. And so we are so thankful that you did this as well.
You all are welcome. It was not a hard decision on my part. I mean, I was a little apprehensive at first for doing the podcast because it is a ongoing investigation and you have to maintain some integrity in the case. And I knew that you had to divulge a lot of information for a podcast. It's not one of those quick reports on television I've done with Paul many times in the past. So I had to weigh those options and it turned out to be a very easy decision on my part to make sure that this case is put back out there for people to know that it's still open. It's unsolved. We still have a long way to go, but we are sure that someone out there that does have some information that will assist us, and we definitely want those phone calls to come in. I also wanted to thank Paul for taking on this task. He's done an incredible job, and I know that he spent a lot of sleepless nights putting this together and worrying about how people were going to perceive it and what response it was going to get. And I wanted to thank Tiffany, Darren, and Luke for participating. I feel for you guys. I always do. I have you, like you all know, I have your mother's poster right at my desk. I see it every day. So, you know, it's something that I want to bring to a close. Unfortunately, we can't bring her back, but hopefully we can bring justice or at least some answers to you guys. And I want to thank WTOP for providing Paul the platform to put this out there and the assistance that they provided Paul to put this together. It's been an outstanding job and an adventure that I'll never forget.
Yeah, I think Paul, remember when we first went down this, when we first started this, I had a lot of apprehension about it. There's no doubt about it. For a lot of the same reasons that Bernie mentioned, that you know, dealing with news and news broadcasts and, you know, things like that, you can get a story that has some information and have two different news companies broadcast it, and it sounds like a completely different story. And it's either being spun one way or the other. In today's world, it's hard to know what news is really accurate and what is what's fact, what's fiction, who's putting a spin on something to get more ratings or higher ratings or more viewers. And it's hard to watch the news nowadays and or listen to the news. And, you know, the three of us had some pretty heated discussions about whether or not we wanted to do this and why and why not. And the concerns about how the public would digest it and how it would be received and would it be spun into something different in social media or how would it go, and not having any control over that was a concern. You know, putting the story and our mother's story and our family story in the hands of a reporter, you know, that we've you know, we've known over the years, but, you know, we just had concerns about what direction it was going to go and how candid could we be. Initially, you know, Paul weighed some of these discussions we had that I had with him and our family had, and he said, you know, I'm concerned about this too. You know, this could really, you know, I can't necessarily control some of these things you're concerned about, and I want to respect your family. I want to respect your mother's, you know, memory. And I couldn't live with myself if this went that direction. And he was going to bow out of this project early on for good reasons. And we had some more discussions about it, and we all came to an agreement that it was a good direction to move forward with. And we were very comfortable with how Paul was going to do the story. And, you know, after Tiffany did her recording, despite the technical difficulties, we were very pleased to hear how it went. And, you know, it was full steam ahead. So, you know, just the care and effort that Paul put into the podcast to make sure that the story was told accurately, but also, you know, out of respect for our family, it was done in a way that it wasn't turned to a salacious story that was going to go a direction that wasn't accurate just for ratings or just to do something different with it. So, you know, that's one thing I'm very thankful for, and WTOP working on that project with him to get it to be a polished, you know, project for the public to consume, and that. So I'm very appreciative of that. And then obviously with Bernie, you know, the story doesn't get told if the three of us aren't part of it, and certainly doesn't get told if Bernie's not part of it. So, you know, as an investigator, you can just put your arm out and say, no, this is an active investigation. We can't talk about it. And that's the end of it. But, you know, Bernie took a lot of time out of his, you know, schedule to make this happen and, you know, rework the case file and go over the case file again and refamiliarize himself with some of the intricate details that may not be on the tip of his tongue, you know, 20 years later, obviously. So, you know, a lot of effort by him to get, you know, kind of back into the case on that level. And, you know, he could have said that, and then there's really not a lot to the podcast other than, you know, three siblings talking about how upset they are about, you know, this murder. But Bernie lent a lot of, you know, factual and, you know, important information to the case that, you know, became a lot of the bread and butter of what this is about. So I definitely appreciate all of that. And then, you know, for Tiffany and Luke, I'm appreciative of them having the strength to move in this project and do it. It's a difficult one for all of us. And the three of us manage our, you know, our emotions different ways. And I know it's been an emotional process for all of us, and each of us handle it differently. And we have our own ways on our, you know, by ourselves to handle these stresses. But I'm appreciative they both had the courage and the strength to dig those memories up and then retell them for the public to hear and put it in their hands to have that respect for our family and our mother and our situation. So I'm greatly appreciative of that.
Luke, you can have the last word.
Yeah, Darren and Tiffany probably tell you that's not the greatest idea, but
I've been warned earlier. I've been warned.
Yeah. Where it can be kind of long, but I've
we better pop a new tape in and get another couple extra gigabytes in there. Get it started.
Bernie's got to work this afternoon, so
right. Yeah, everything Darren said is 100%. I was worried how it would be taken and how I talked about Tiffany with Paul and getting us kind of acquainted with Paul, you know, after I met with him in the park in DC, I like immediately knew afterwards that he's got our best interest at hand, our mother's, you know, respect. She can't, you know, be here to, you know, back herself, obviously. So it's up to us to put her best interest forward, you know, her image. So you guys did a great job and I appreciate it. You know, definitely with Bernie, like I said, it's just that podcast last night that I listened to was definitely the crossing the finish line as far as realizing how much work that that him and his team have put in, and all the other people that were involved in it, the war room. I mean, it's amazing to hear it. So I appreciate everybody's looking into it.
Julia, you can have the last word.
Oh, my. Wow, I didn't expect that, Paul. I just wanted to thank everybody. I appreciate your time. I know Paul does as well. And Paul, thank you. Thank you for bringing this story to us. Our goal, Paul and my goal throughout this entire process, was to honor Sherry and to try and find a resolution to this case. And so I am hopeful. I don't think that this will be the last episode. I think that there's more to come, and I'm hopeful about that.
So that's about as much as we can tell you now about the murder of Sherry Crandall and the efforts to find her killer. You can be rest assured if there are any developments at all in this case, they will be covered in a future episode. If you've liked this podcast, leave us a review on Apple or share your experience listening to our podcast on your social media channels. Tag us at AM Nightmare Pod on Facebook and Twitter. Writing a review and sharing on social media helps us get discovered by other true crime fans and allows us to make future podcasts like this one. Our thanks to Tiffany, Darren, and Luke Crandall, as well as Prince George's County Police Detective Bernie Nelson for joining us. One other note, I'd like to dedicate this last episode to Beth Parker, a friend of the show and longtime journalist here in Washington, D.C., who recently lost her battle with cancer. On March 5th, 17 days before she died, Beth took the time to write a note about the success of the podcast, which had recently climbed into Apple's top 200. Replying on Facebook, Beth said, "Nice. Cheering you on, Paulie." Beth was a bright, shining light who was always looking out for others. She left us way too soon, and we miss you, Beth. And to all the other friends of the show, thanks for listening.
Seven years ago, college wrestler Damien Hurd disappeared from a party in Gunnison, Colorado.
Everyone had been drinking or whatever, the usual party scene.
When, how, and why he left are questions I need your help to understand.
Nobody's heard from him.
No, it's just like he disappeared.
From Cold Case Productions and Podcast One, Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Hurd. I'm your host, Claire Sanima. Join me April 20th for the season premiere.